Many are called, but few are chosen. I dare say that if you have studied the Gospels, if you have been in the church for any period of time, you've heard that. Many are called, but few are chosen. These are the words which Christ said after he'd finished two different parables, one of them being the parable of the laborers in the field, and also the parable of the wedding feast. Many are called, but few are chosen. It's kind of an ominous thing to hear said, you think, especially coming from the mouth of Christ, our Messiah. Many are called, but few are chosen. How many of you have ever heard someone in church say that? Yeah. I think I've heard that referred to myself at times. To be called and chosen. This is integral to our salvation. It is integral to our place at the table, to being a first fruit, to being a part of the kingdom of God, a part of his family. To be called and chosen. At the beginning of the year, I decided that I wanted to begin a series entitled, Who Am I? Who am I? And do you know? So as this sermon today will play into that, the title is, Many Are Called, But Few Are Chosen. The part that I want to have us ask ourselves is, am I called? Am I chosen? This is one of those things that we have to know. Because I would dare say that at some point in your life, in your spiritual growth, and I can share with you that in my own life, I've asked that question. Am I really called? Have I been chosen? You know, is it just a fluke? I think many people, if you've grown up in the church as children, you've wondered, well, am I called or is it my parents' church? Is it their faith? Is it their upbringing and not my own? This is something that we have to know as children of God, so that we may then go forward in confidence about our Father's business. You know, it's interesting because, as I stated, Christ's words, many are called but few are chosen, he utters these words after those two parables of the laborers in the field and the parable of the wedding feast. But he begins by explaining it after a parable which he says before that. It's one of the only parables where Christ actually goes into detail and explains what it is that he's just taught. So I want us to begin by turning to Matthew 13. Because this is something which, again, I think we've heard said, we've probably said it ourselves. And it's important that we understand what this means for us, as well as those whom we know, those whom we love, those who are in the world. We'll begin with verse 1, chapter 13. And on the same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat by the sea. And great multitudes were gathered together to him, so that he got into a boat and sat. And the whole multitude stood on the shore. So essentially what he's doing is getting into a boat and pushing himself away from the shore. And this served a couple of purposes for the multitude. Typically the shore angles up as it goes away from the water. And so people were somewhat elevated. It allowed them to actually see him while he spoke. And secondly, voices carry over water. This allowed everyone to actually hear the words that he was teaching, that they could hear them individually, and thus, you know, contemplate what it was he was saying to them. And he spoke many things to them in parables, saying, "Behold, a sower went out to sow." Now, how many of you have ever sowed a field? Yeah, we've got a few. He is speaking directly to people who understood this as a part of their very survival, as a part of their lives. The Israelites had always been an agrarian society. Even if they had businesses or other talents and abilities that they used, they survived off the food that they grew, whether it was animal or plant. And so they understood what it meant to sow seeds, to bury them in the earth, to wait apprehensively for them to grow. This was something which was ingrained in them in a way that those of us who, well, the only time we get nervous about it is when we go to the grocery store and the shelves are bare. You're like, oh boy, you know, where are we going to get that from? This is something that they lived with every year. They didn't have grocery stores. They didn't have refrigeration like we did. Those seeds played a much more important part in their lives than ever crosses our minds. This is one of the reasons why Christ is speaking to them in this way. It is a way that they will not only comprehend and understand, but is integral to their very survival. The planting and the harvesting of seeds, that there may be crops, that they may live. And so he says, "Behold, a sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some seeds fell by the wayside, and the birds came and devoured them." Now, again, for us, it's not such a big deal. You know, well, we lost a few seeds. You know, the birds ate them up. But when this is your life, and the seeds which you have are limited, this is a great loss. "And some fell on stony places, where they did not have much earth, and they immediately sprang up, because they had no depth of earth." The seeds that are planted on the ground germinate quicker than the seeds that are buried, that have depth to them. "But when the sun came up, they were scorched, because they had no root. They withered away." They did not have the depth which had been pushed into the earth, that it may have protection, that it may take in moisture. And so it died. "And some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprang up and choked them." Now, if you've never sown a field, how many of you have at least planted a garden? Yeah. Immediately in planting a garden, you develop a great distaste for thorns, for weeds, for crabgrass, for this stuff that, you know, you've worked really hard to get it planted, and you're like, "Argh! You know, look at this stuff, and it's killing off my precious plant." And it says in verse 8, "And others fell on good ground and yielded a crop, some 100-fold, some 60, and some 30. So he has just spoken words that all of them understand, that are important to them in a way. He's painted a picture that they can all grasp, because it's something they've all done, that they do annually, repetitively. And then he says, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." He's saying, this is something important. Do you get it? Now, I was counseling someone one time, and, you know, they would ask questions and stuff, and I didn't want to bring out the repetitive hammer and club him with it over the head. as Mr. Wilhelm, you know, had a prayer. I actually thought that was a wonderful, you know, example. Because, you know, sometimes you just want to beat the message in. But you realize that that's not going to do so much good. You want the people to figure it out. You want to lead them to the water, but you want them to realize they need to drink from it. I had, you know, someone say to me, they're like, why are you always telling me stories in these things? Why don't you just, you know, hit me with it? And I'm like, well, kind of what you know, I'm telling you the story so you'll figure it out. You know, we're talking about serious and important things. Here's A, here's B, now tell me what C is. This is what Christ did. He painted pictures that they could understand, and he expected them to make the spiritual connections in their daily lives. That would bring them the answers that they were seeking for. Once they figured that out on their own, it becomes ingrained in a way that just giving someone the answer doesn't do. It's like, you know, feeding a man, you know, fish one day or teaching him to fish. You're helping him learn how to mine the truth in these parables and to go and find layers and depth within these words and how it applies to each and every one of us in our lives. Now, of course, just like the man I was counseling, the disciples who have traveled with him, they're living with him day by day. Verse 10, the disciples come and said to him, why do you speak to them in parables? I'm sure they were used to him speaking much more directly to them. And they probably had heard the people trying to, you know, kind of scratching their heads and being like, what's he saying? I mean, we know it's important because he said, you know, if you have ears to hear, let him hear. You know, what's he mean? What's he saying? And Christ answered and said to them, because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. You know, they're spending time with Christ, Son of God, God on earth. They're getting an instruction, a teaching, which not everybody's getting. In verse 12, for whoever has, to him more will be given. You know, and of course, along with that more knowledge, that more understanding, there is a greater expectation. And he will have abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. You know, sometimes we stop and think, well, how is that fair? You know, they've got some understanding, and yet if nothing else happens with it, it's taken away? Well, this is much like the parable of the talents. If you hear it, if you receive it, and you don't do anything with it, then it comes to nothing. He says, therefore, I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. And in them the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled. So he goes back, he's giving them a very direct remez, which says, hearing you will hear and shall not understand, and seeing you will see and not perceive. Now, I kind of think of myself in this way. You know, like if I was an English lit major in college, and so when someone tried to describe higher levels of math to me, I just kind of went, you know, you get that blank face, you know, staring back at them. None of it's sinking in. It's all going over my head. And I wish I could explain to you the frustration that the tutors had for me. Because they're like, it's right there, can't you see it? I'm like, no, I do not get that. And I dare say that, again, if you've tried to share aspects of your calling with other people, of why you do what you do, you've seen that look. Because some people just, they're like, I don't get it. And I can look at the same scripture that you're talking about, and it just doesn't click. They don't see it. And some of that, as we continue on in verse 15, for the hearts of the people have grown dull. I never really wanted to understand calculus. Had no desire. I was not asking for it. If, you know, math was, what do I have to do to get through this? I just got to graduate. I just got to fulfill these credits. That's pretty much how most people look at the Word of God. They're not truly asking. They're not truly seeking and pursuing it. Their ears are hard of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, lest they should understand with their hearts and turn, so that I should heal them. Again, this isn't a curse which God has put on them. It's a curse which mankind has put on himself. Again, have you ever explained something to someone and you do start to see some recognition? And they're like, oh, well, that makes sense. You know, oh, the seventh day is the Sabbath. Oh, yeah, I can see that. No, oh, wait a minute, that's football. Oh, new. And they will turn away from it because it requires something. Because if they would turn towards it, if they would ask for it, if they would seek it, then God would heal them. He would bless them. But it's not really what they want. In verse 16, and Christ tells the disciples directly, but blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. There is an understanding, and it takes effect on them. It has an impact on them that they're responding to. He says, he says, verse 17, for assuredly I say to you that many prophets and righteous men desired to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it. There's something missing. You know, the disciples, I'm sure in their life, had heard many different people who could predict what was going to happen in their world, in their lives. You know, they could look at the weather and say, boy, we got bad times coming. They could look at things happening in the countries around them and say, boy, there's going to be issues here. So-and-so really irritated Rome. They're going to raise taxes on us. This is how it's going to impact us. This is how it's going to affect us. Some of them could even look at what was happening in their faith and their religion and how that affected their country and say, well, this isn't going to go well for us. Just like today. We have many people who are around, many who are on social media, YouTube, they have their own little media channels, who I would say are prophesying. They're looking around at our world and our country and saying, ooh, we've got bad times coming. You know, they can see the signs. You know, they can see that what's happening in our world is wrong. There's a famous politically incorrect commentator on HBO. He's been around for a long time. I won't say his name. You guys probably guess who I'm talking about. He's looking at stuff and, you know, he's a famous liberal and he's saying, we've gone nuts. We've gone crazy. Our brains have literally just fallen out of our heads and we're doomed. Look at where this is going to go and where this is going to take us, right off the cliff. I dare say he's correct. He's prophesying because he can see the end result. The thing that he does not see is that the only salvation that there is God. You know, that's not a part of their equation. When they can look at the economic policies of our government and go, Well, there's no way that's sustainable. This will lead to an economic collapse. This is going to bring about something far worse than a depression. They're prophesying because they can see it. But none of them are saying we need to turn back to God. So they do have eyes to see and ears to hear, but they don't see and hear what you do. The Word of God. So as Christ explains this to them, I think just like the parable of sowing seeds, they're getting it. They're like, oh yeah. And so then he begins to explain this issue, the actual parable as he describes it. Therefore, hear the parable of the sower. Again, when anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, then the wicked one comes and snatches away what is sown in his heart. This is he who received seed by the wayside. You know, it's scattered, it's thrown out. And it says that it fell by the wayside, kind of on the road, kind of hard-packed ground. And the birds come and devour them. Again, any of you who have planted a garden ever seen what, whether it's birds or squirrels or mice or chipmunks or maybe a raccoon, can do to all that hard work that you've done? You know, you put it out there and, you know, maybe you didn't get the seeds deep enough or whatever, and you look out and there's birds all over the place. Now, you may be an animal lover, but what goes through your heart and mind when you see that? Yeah. And it's attacking the fruits of your labor. It's attacking your sustenance, what you're planning on. You know, the harvest that you're looking forward to, the food that will sustain you through the winter. He says, that's how we look at how Satan plucks these people away. You know, it was there were seeds that were planted or at least cast out. And it doesn't even have a chance. You know, the people who it lands on them, it just has no impact. There's nothing there. By tomorrow, it's gone. I dare say if you've ever shared your faith with someone, maybe a family member, a coworker, and they're like, hey, you coming in on Saturday, for a little that overtime they offered? No. Really? Why not? Well, it's the Sabbath day. It's the seventh day Sabbath. And they're like, oh, well, your choice. You know, there's no impact at all. The seed doesn't even register. It's just not there. They're busy doing their own thing, their own lives. They're, you know, looking for that little bit extra in the paycheck. And they, you know, it just blows away, leaving nothing, like it was never there to begin with. In verse 20, but he who received the word or the seed on stony places, this is he who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. You know, there are people that maybe you've shared something with, you've explained that Sabbath day, and they stop and they go, oh, I've always wondered about that. You know, I was a kid and I looked at the calendar and I was like, well, that says Saturday is the seventh day. And, you know, I had these questions. That's awesome. Where do you go to church? I'd love to go to church with you. This is great. And it's very exciting for us too. It's very easy to get, oh, you know, wow, look at this. It's encouraging. You know, I was a trainee about 10 years ago in Nebraska. I was serving with Mr. Mitchell Knapp, and we got a call to go out and visit someone, kind of like central part of the state. And we showed up, and here was this man, his wife, his kids, and he was so excited. He had gone through every piece of literature that the church had. He had devoured it in a matter of a couple of weeks. you know, and we would talk to him, and we're like, well, you know, this is what we do, and this is what we teach, and this is some of our doctrines, and we'd start explaining it, and he would finish our sentences. And he would be like, yes, yes, that's exactly it. That's what I'm excited here. I'm so glad you guys are here. You know, he was so enthusiastic. And that's contagious. You know, it's like, wow, you know, this is awesome. Here's this guy, and this is wonderful. And, you know, we talked with him, and he's like, you know, I'm already making plans. And his wife was there, and she's like, well, you know, it all seems to be true. We're looking forward to it, and we're going to be there on Sabbath. And they found out where we were having church and the whole thing. And we explained it, and we prepped them for what it would be like to come to church services. And it was just this joyous occasion. And they were hugging us as we left. It was great. I left on a spiritual high. It was awesome. And we go out, and we get in the car, and we're driving back. And Mr. Knapp and I are talking. And he was happy, too. And I was like, oh, this is great. And I'm thinking about the future and what, and his family and the kids and what that's going to mean for the congregation and all this. And Mr. Knapp's like, yeah, that's what we hope for. And I'm like, yeah. And I was like, wait a minute. You know, what do you think? And he said, I really hope this happens. And it seems like it really could. He said, but just wait. Don't get too excited. Don't get too carried away. Don't really get your hopes up. He said, if he comes in, he says, I'm going to be so thrilled to have them. And this is what we're going to do. But let's just wait and see. And sure enough, Sabbath rolled around and they weren't there. Now, I had promised them that I'd be in touch, that I would send them some more information and do things. And I emailed and I think maybe called, and it took a little while to get a response. And finally, after several days, maybe even a couple of weeks, he calls me, and he's like, a very different tone. Hey, yeah, you know, we really appreciated you guys coming out and visiting with us, and we're still going to come. You know, we're planning. We're gonna do this because it's all true. We believe it. And really appreciate the time that you guys took to come out, but you know, we're just gonna kind of wait and see what happens. And never heard from them again. Nothing. See, they sprang up with deep joy. And he knew that there was gonna be a little bit of pushback from family. They had a family business, and they were Lutheran and very staunch and loyal. But he hadn't experienced it yet because he hadn't shared it with them. And he wasn't ready for the trial, for the difficulty, for maybe the disappointment that family would have when you say, yeah, we're not going to church with you on Sunday. We're gonna go on Saturday. And it withered. It just did not last. And that happens a lot. Often. And this is what Christ is explaining to them. There are so many, I think, in that time also, because Christ was preaching to the Jews. They were raised in it. They believed in it. They knew it. But you know, as we also read, there was a lot of politics at that time. If someone heard Christ speaking and they got excited about it, I'm like, wow, here's really, truly a prophet. Even if they didn't know he was the Son of God, even if they didn't know he was the Messiah, they'd get really excited about it. And then they'd go home and like, hey, we heard this teacher, this prophet, this rabbi. And they're like, ugh. Well, you know, we know who his real father is. We know this about them. Or they're those smelly Galileans. You know, whatever. They withered. It didn't take root. It didn't grow. Verse 21, yet he has no root in himself, but endures only for a while. For when tribulation or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he stumbles. you know, I've known people, become excited because someone that I had talked to and known and worked with was like, this is absolutely right. They were so excited. And they'd moved to a different place. I sent him literature and information on how we could go to church services. And he called me a while later and we were talking and I said, so what did you think? Did you go? And he's like, well, no. I'm like, why not? He goes, well, my grandmother. His grandfather and his grandmother had basically raised him. And his grandfather had been a Baptist minister. And he had died many years before, but his grandmother was still there. And he just said, well, it'll break her heart. It's just, if she looks at me with that look of disappointment, I just can't do that. He said, so maybe once my kids are grown and grandma passes away and all these other things, then maybe. I don't think that day has ever come. Not that his kids aren't grown, because they are, and not that grandma hasn't passed away, because she has. But there was no depth of root. Now, verse 22, this is a little bit of a different scenario. Now, he who received seed among the thorns is he who hears the word, and then the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becomes unfruitful. So they've received the word, they understand it, and then the cares of this world, the deceitfulness of it, these things which distract us, which turn us away, that chokes the word. You know, when we have idols that are more important than God, you know, maybe someone has worked like that rich young ruler, that lawyer. He had everything. Wealth. He had good reputation. He had all of this. And Christ says, well, go and sell all that you have and follow me. And, okay, I'll speak really, no, I won't speak really loud. Okay. And he says, you know, that's too much. Do you know how hard I've worked for this? Do you know what it's going to cost me? You know, we come across those temptations, those weeds, those thorns, which can choke us out. You know, the cares of this world. I dare say that quite a few of you have lost jobs because of your faith. Maybe it was a promotion. Maybe it was the inability to take advantage of an opportunity when it came along. See, there are many who say, and they'll justify it to themselves of, well, that's what I got to do. I mean, who, you know, if God loves you, why would he want me to take a lesser job or to not take advantage of this blessing? God will forgive it. You see, those deceitful riches choke the word. And then he doesn't bear any fruit. He becomes an unworthy servant. This is truly, brethren, one of the core tenets of being a child of God. We have to receive the word and understand it and bear fruit. Verse 23, but he who received seed on the good ground is he who hears the word. So the seed actually lands and understands it. There's now roots. There's a depth. And who indeed bears fruit and produces some 100-fold, some 60, and some 30. There's evidence in the fruit that is born. Now, like I said before, many of us have questioned our calling. You know, maybe there was a point in our life where we said, well, am I really called? Am I really supposed to be here? I've counseled quite a few young people, and I remember being at ABC and talking with young people. And they were at that place where they kind of had to make the choice. You know, not be in the middle, not riding the rail, but either in or out. And they're like, well, how do you know if God's calling you? How do you, you know, what's the test? And I said, well, when we go through the scriptures, when we go through the word, when you read it, do you get it? Does it make sense to you? You know, the opposite would be there's no, you know, I have no idea why that's there. And I said, and they all actually responded, well, yeah, I mean, I get it. We go through the doctrines, we look at the parables, and yeah, I mean, I can see that's true. And I said, okay, you are being called. You are being called. You know, we have trials, we have struggles, we have things happening in our life, and we may question ourselves. So many of us have poor self-images. You know, who am I, a sinner? I've fallen, I've made mistakes. Is Christ really calling me? You know, maybe I'm just here by mistake. Maybe it was an accident. If you can read the Word of God and see that you made a mistake, that you fell short, that you sinned, He's still calling you. That's the litmus test. You have received the Word, however that was. Maybe that was through coming to church, through family. Maybe that was picking up a piece of literature years ago, the Plain Truth magazine, and having it strike you. This is true. Maybe it was a voice on the radio or on television. Oh, I see that. I get it. That's the litmus test that God is calling you individually. And that's when we have to take it seriously. Oh, I've received the word, and now I have understanding. And with that understanding, I must now do something. This requires that commitment to become a laborer in the field, to bear fruit. This is, as Christ explains it, he who hears the word and understands it, who indeed bears fruit and then produces. You know, this is something, if you've ever, again, planted seeds, we'll just say corn. You have to forgive me for the corn analogy because we were in South Dakota for so long. You know, so much corn. But you take one kernel and you plant that in the ground. And then after a while, you know, the green shoots kind of come out of the ground and it starts to grow, and then things start to leaf out and it gains height. And then you start seeing the cobs growing. And what a farmer will do, and so many times I would, you know, I'd ask the farmers, I'd be like, hey, how's your crop doing? You know, it's June, it's July, it's August. Depending on the rain, what's happening? What are they fighting with? How's your crop looking? And they would talk about going out and pulling off ears of corn and peeling back the silk to see how many kernels are now on that cob. And sometimes, you know, you got this big cob, but maybe only half of it actually has kernels. And they're like, oh, well, I'm not going to have a very good yield this year. You know, we're going to harvest it, but the yield won't be so much. Not from that seed. Other times, things work out well. Just the right amount of sunlight, just the right amount of water. They've fertilized it. They've tended it. God's blessed them. They haven't had, you know, infestations of bugs. And when they peel back that silk, you can just see the smile on their faces. like, oh, this is going to be a good year. You couldn't pack another kernel onto that cob. Look at this. This is the yielding of fruit from that one seed that was planted, that found good ground, that was at the right depth, that was able to withstand maybe the hailstorm, that was able to withstand maybe the drought, the loss of rain. And it grew and it bore fruit. In bearing fruit from that one seed, as we look at it spiritually, that God planted in all of us, at that calling, we've answered it, and we are living it. We are allowing that to grow in us and to change us, who we are. Fruit grows from that. And that fruit is expected to yield a greater harvest. We are expected to share that, whether it's an answer for the hope that we have within us, or for why we do what we do in the keeping of God's laws, and maybe more importantly, why we don't do what others do. We are all called to share the gospel. Not always in the same ways, not always up here from the pulpit. That's given to some, not given to everyone. But all of us are given a ministry, a service, a work with the fruit that we have yielded. This is, brethren, not only how we know that we are called, but also how we learn that we are chosen. Because there's evidence. There's more fruit that is born, that we can see that affecting the lives of others, not only in our immediate families, but in those people that are our neighbors, our friends, people we work with, that you are by yourself an example and a light. And that's planting seeds. Maybe those will grow, maybe they won't, or maybe not right now, maybe in the future. This is the beginning of how we know that, one, we are called and we are becoming chosen. Because many are called, but few are chosen. This is something which each and every one of us has to know. Brethren, if you're here, you are called. Because let's face it, you could be somewhere else right now. If you're here and you're hearing the words and it makes sense to you, you are called. The chosen part takes work, takes time. It is at that harvesting time when we can share what we have been given, that seed that was implanted. Next week, when we have our combined service, I'll have a second part to this message called Called and Chosen.